on 97.5 and 102.5 FM, DAB and online at pulse1.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One. With Provident, lending a helping hand since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
Kia ora and g'day rugby league fans. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, spitting lyrical about nothing but rugby league for the next hour. Leon Price and Luke Robinson are both on duty tonight for their respective clubs, so I brought a ringer in for tonight's show. None other than Super League legend, that is Stuart Fearless Fielden. He likes it when I say that. Say hello, Stu.
Hi, hello, Stu.
Okay, not literally. All right, what a grand final was, and Stu was there, so he'll give us his verdict, I'm sure. Just because the league competition is now finished does not mean rugby league has, as we have the Four Nations kicking off this weekend down under between New Zealand, shall I say, the number one team in the world, New Zealand, and the number two is Australia. So loads to cover tonight with our guest presenter, Stuart. So let's get it on. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
The Robbie Hunter Paul Show. News and views.
All right, so cool. We're live on the show, actually live on Facebook. So if you want to view me and Stu in the studio, Ewan's hiding in the background and Jakey's across social media tonight. Look, Jakey, what are you doing? You want to get on camera, don't you? Remember what happened last time you got on camera? Embarrassed. You got up to mid. Yeah, leave it. He's saying leave it. He got pumped on camera there. What was it again? It was a prank. That's right. You got pranked on camera. It had like 350,000 views of him getting pranked in Leeds City Centre. Wanted to have a fight with someone, wasn't it? And you were like, go away, leave me alone. Did the guy get naked or something? No, he didn't get naked. You were not excited.
Are you going to tell us a story or
sing a song, dance, anything? Okay, so Stu Fielden's in the studio as guest presenter tonight. Opening up, if anyone's got a question, fire it over. Stuart is long in the tooth. We've been around the game for a long time. Every accolade in the game, 7 grand finals. He went to with 8th on the weekend, and we're going to get into that very soon. So if you've got anything that you want to ask Stuart or myself or Ewan about, Ewan, what do you know about, mate? Or Jakey about getting pranked? Just fire us over a question. Don't get upset, Jakey. Don't get upset. It's all good. Stuart, fantastic to have you on the show. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thank you.
Look at you. You're as big as a house. If you're looking at Stuart, we've got Facebook Live on my Facebook page, my whatever you call it, my profile, my promotional page. you'll see Stuart. All you can see is giant biceps. Stop tensing up. But you tell us a little bit about what you're up to at the moment. Obviously, there's a reason why you're in such good nick, isn't there?
Well, it's standard training, really.
I'm going to speak into the microphone, mate. And
is that right better?
There's a system to this,
right? Okay.
Come on, it's not your first time.
It's not my first time. I'm not a radio virgin. At the minute, I'm on with becoming a personal trainer and launching Fielden Fitness.
Fielden Fitness.
And that's going to be...
rolls, two Fs.
Kind of fits, doesn't it?
It does.
Fanatics. Fielden Fitness.
Fitness, fanatics, it fits.
Right, anymore? and that's going to be launched shortly in the next 4 weeks at stuartfielding.com. And that's sort of the journey of
start. Sorry, a shameless plug.
Yeah, very shameless.
Get in there, son.
Always.
You've got
always.
The platform.
At the minute, I'm kind of the back end of finishing my level 3.
And how's the journey been in regards to being educated once again? Because you've done a whole host of things. I mean, you've got a property portfolio. You own businesses. Why the fitness world? I mean, look at you in phenomenal shape. You're a walking example of how players should live their lives post careers. Weirdly, it doesn't happen much though. These rubber rings start to appear around players' bellies. You know, once you stop competing. But I mean, you're living proof that actually it's good to continue on with it. What's the passion? What's the rationale behind it?
Just part of keeping fit and healthy. I mean, especially because I can't run. I stopped playing and...
Chocolate knees.
Yeah, chocolate knees. Got an infection in the knee, so that stopped the end of the playing, but that also obviously impacts quite largely on fitness. I mean, I'd still be playing now if it wasn't for my knee.
So the fitness side...
How old do you think?
You were saying, I reckon, 35.
Backwards.
35, a year older than Leon.
I wouldn't mind being 35. I'm 37. Just turned 37.
JP was, he's got to be 39 now. He came out of retirement. You know, he played quite well for Hull KR during the Super 8 qualifiers. So you'd still have two more years left in you.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah, without doubt. No, I would have. But unfortunately, you know, career, part of rugby league is injuries, and career-ending injuries are also part of rugby league, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was quite tough for you, obviously. You went in for a clean-out on your knee, but you ended up getting an infection.
Yeah, it's a strange one. So I played about 445 games. So you're thinking, right, if you're going to finish...
Well, that is a lot of games, man.
It's a few.
That's a lot of mileage. But that Super League game, but then including the internationals that you played together?
35 internationals and cups and all the rest. So that's in totality all the games. So you're thinking, right... In all those minutes, you get injured, you're going to get done in the game, aren't you? You're going to get, you know, a really bad ACL, an unhappy try, whatever it is. You know, the worst injuries I ever got were at training.
Normally by yourself.
Not by myself. No,
a lot of people don't realise, but Stuart was a bit of a nightmare to train with because the guy doesn't have a second gear or third gear. It's basically everything is at ramming speed. And it's frightening because, you know, like sometimes you had to pull Stu aside and go, Stu, we're teammates. We're on the same side. Stu, you know, a guy like me who's half his size. Stu, I'm half your size. You know, take it easy on me. I remember sometimes you're flying out of the line in captain's knock to put pressure on Paul Deacon and completely cleaning him out.
I think you're mistaken there, Roy. As the song goes,
mistaken
it wasn't
all.
Me.
It wasn't me, yeah, I'm sure it wasn't me. So let's talk about the grand final. Mate, this was your first grand final as a spectator.
Yeah.
You've played in 7 grand finals yourself. The last time you went to Old Trafford, basically you went there to play for Wigan. You were successful.
Yeah.
So the last time you went to Old Trafford, you walked away with a gold ring. A very happy man. And obviously... last weekend, you went as a spectator for the first time. What was that like?
Well, a bit surreal. Certainly, we drove on there, me and the missus. And so parking's a strange one because I've actually never driven. Well, I did once in 1998, but since then I've never driven to Old Trafford. So the next seven visits
You're
after
on a
that,
bus.
We're on a bus. The bus takes you straight in, literally into the tunnel.
To the front door.
Yeah. Well, not even that, but
no
inside the stadium. Knock, knock. Yeah, straight in, you're away, and obviously leaving, you get straight back on the bus, apart from up and being in the lounge. So it's a bit of it's something I've never done before, a kind of a first, so it was strange. It was, in one way, it was nice because you get to kind of be a fan, so you see what the fans kind of experience at a grand final or a final. You know, they're both similar at the Challenge Cup and grand final, so it was an experience, and to top it off, what a game it was.
Oh, yeah, I got to admit, yes, what a fantastic game. Sean Wayne, in his post-match press conference, said he didn't feel at any point that the game was going to get away from them. Actually, but I think the opening 25 minutes or 20 minutes was all about Wigan, and then the second half of the first half, the following 20 minutes, it was all Warrington winning at the break just ahead. But at halftime, Wigan come out and they really pressed home, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I had a chat with a few people and I maintained even at half time that Wigan were going to win by two. And the reason for that was that I think it's what's the culture of the Wigan club is the mental toughness. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all sorts of, words up there in the club and things like that.
It's a culture that's kind of embedded and it's been embedded in there since like the late 70s, isn't it?
Well,
you know, when you left Bradford in the middle of 2000 and what was it, 8? 2006?
Yeah.
Was that evident when you walked into the place or did you just have to recreate it again?
It was totally different. I mean, obviously you had the great Wigan team, didn't you? The Hanley, the O'Fires, and they dominated everything. And certainly at that time when Brian went on there in 2006, so he's taken over, the club were losing, weren't they? They lost 12 games in a row. They were bottom of the league.
Yes, that's right. There was a risk of relegation
yeah.
into the championship, which was sort of, oh, everyone was frightened at it because Wigan was such a powerhouse as a brand.
Yeah, without doubt. Everyone, if you speak to anyone in sort of in the, you know, anything about rugby, if you sit down south anywhere that's not really familiar with rugby league, they know Wigan, don't they? Everyone's mm-hmm. heard of Wigan from those glory days when it used to be on BBC. So when we sort of went there with Nobby, it was something different. You know, everything was changing. Millwall had just left, mm-hmm. kind of been sacked. Nobby took over and brought a lot of the steel and a lot of things. And I think the credit for that year of rescuing the club needs to go to Nobby. The personnel he brought in, you know, he brought in quite a few players. I wasn't meaning that. He brought in quite a few, didn't he? Radlinski, Dobson. You know, he brought quite a few players in there. And just how he changed it all. But the main mentality change and how the club changed in my time there, that 7 years, was when Maguire took over.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll get back to that. We're going to go to a break now. And when we come back, we're going to have some of your questions that you've been sending in over the course of this week. And also, we'll be hearing more about Wigan and Stuart Fielding's background and that grand final on the weekend. So all that and more. So stick with us here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
It's all about rugby. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
Welcome back to the RHP Show. We're getting down and dirty with all things rugby league, and we're live on Facebook Live as well. So if you want to watch us right here in the studio, I've got Stu Fielding in the house with me. Say hello again, Stu.
Hello, Stu.
That's rubbish. That. we've just been talking to Stu about his change from Bradford to Wigan, and also the culture of Wigan and how everything was ticking along when he joined the club. But let's take a step back. We were talking about the grand final. Do you agree with Sean Wayne saying that is probably the best win that Wigan's ever achieved? I think what he's trying to suggest is actually talking about the adversity that the club was having to deal with, you know, with, you know, players with the likes of O'Loughlin really sort of only coming into the squad a day before, and the fact that they haven't functioned completely well throughout the entirety of this year, but they've been able to achieve Super League success. You know, they had some adversity also. John Bateman got internally suspended for, I think, something like 8 weeks. And, you know, at the time he was travelling along as potentially the man of steel as the number one performer. Also, the confusion that the suspected issues that caused within the squad itself, but they were able to get over that and through that adversity still come away with the silverware. So do you agree that that probably for them was the best grand final win that they've been that they've enjoyed?
It's got to be up there, because that's the fourth grand final win, is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be up there just because, like you said, the adversity they faced, they weren't hitting the straps really all year, were they?
No.
Kind of,
but they were there or thereabouts, weren't they? I mean, they finished the Super League second, but for me, they weren't really on the radar. It was all about Warrington and Hull FC.
Yeah, they were. One of the key moments, I think, the telling point, and that's what one of the reasons I always thought Wigan were going to win. Certainly, as we spoke about the mental toughness side, which is without doubt a massive kind of strong point for Wigan, and always, I think, always certainly has been since Maguire took over. And that was, if you go back to the result at Warrington against Wigan before, sort of the last game before this game, and that was when Wigan got a man sent off and they came from behind by 14 points to win.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's got to be up there with one of the best victories for Wigan, but just shows the kind of mentality that they have.
And you know what I like about Wigan as well is that they're actually quite a young team. I mean, there are some old heads like O'Loughlin and that in the team, but there's a lot of, it seems that the conveyor belt of talent that comes through their junior ranks have a similar type of mentality. And they, you were there when Michael Maguire input that system. Sean Wayne's gone on to sort of the continuation of that system. But was it self-evident when you were at the club, you know, that it had to be breathed throughout the whole of the tears within the club?
At the point, I think, because obviously there were systems in place when Nobby took over. I mean, I think the telling point there is simply that, you know, Brian did a great job, and as I said earlier, it's down to him, I think, why Wigan stayed up. Obviously, the players involved, but if he hadn't been there, if he hadn't brought the players and changed the systems in place, Wigan would have been in the Championship.
Or whatever. We'd love Nobby on this show.
Yeah, whatever it was called back then. But then when Maguire came in, he literally changed the club, you know, from bottom to top. And Sean's done very, very well since, without doubt. But I fundamentally still Wigan are kind of what Maguire put in place. The system's in place. The wrestle's been torn down a little bit because it's had to be with the RFL enforcing various different rules and things like that.
Cannonball tackle.
Yeah, well, all that. But the wrestle's been torn down a lot, hasn't it? But what he brought was that kind of wrestle from Melbourne. Sort of Melbourne had been using successfully, highly successfully, for 4 or 5 years before that. And that was kind of one of his fortes, was Maguire. If you look when he took over at Souths, he obviously took that straight there. The following year, you know, they won.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what a great coach he is. But talk back to your point you said, all the things that he would put in place, the mentality side, the systems, you know, that they were all put in place by Maguire. And certainly Sean has done, you know, great things, and he's probably will have changed bits and bats, but fundamentally, like I said, I think all the systems are very similar. And touching on what you said again about the youth system, what a great youth system. I mean, you've got to say Leeds and Wigan have got the key leading youth elements, haven't they?
Yeah, I think every year they're given that five star development acknowledgement, so to speak, from the governing body. And the measuring, they are the measuring sticks on how to develop your players. I think Warrington also, they're another club that are right up there. Hull FC are building their way towards it with their two whole teams combined. And it's quite interesting, you may not know about this, but Hull KR and Hull FC's youth systems are combined. And when it comes to, well, who gets the talent, when it comes to promotion into the first team, they actually take turns at taking their pick.
It's like an NFL draft.
Yeah, a draft system.
Do you know what?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Well,
I didn't know it until a few weeks ago when I asked. I think me and Leon were talking about it, and Leon was saying that. Anyway, shout out to Leon. Leon's listening on the radio, I think, as he's travelling out to
LFC. Elron.
We love you, Leon. Get there in one safe. In a safe. Well, get there safely, mate. we've got some questions from supporters, mate. Debbie Brown wants to know what your favourite memory from playing at the Bradford Bulls was. What it was? And there's so many fantastic memories. And, you know, obviously this is a family show, so you can't talk about times off the field. But we're talking about times on the field.
Yeah, obviously.
Please don't.
It's a hard one when you throw that at you because... Yeah, you said touched on then there's quite a few, but you're saying you got to pick one. So I probably picked the West Tigers game, and the reason for that was because kind of personally everything kind of went right for me, and it topped off a good 2005. That's why I said it's hard to just say right, boom. It was just that one game there because it kind of tinged off winning the grand final in 2005. Well, you were there as well. The Bradford lost 9 players, some great names, obviously, you know, yourself, Jamie, Leon, Radford, you know, lost a lot of talent and then went on to win that in adversity.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you left later that year in 2006, all in all, there were 10 players from the core of that team that actually moved on. So, I mean, that was a sort of a tough year for Bradford as a whole, the end of 2005, but we had that success. And I do remember the game in 2006. I was actually part of the Sky team when we were calling that game. And I remember I was so wrapped up in the game, they were talking to me in the gantry and I couldn't hear them because I was watching you guys, you know, perform so diligently. Leon enjoys that one. Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't Leon. I think Deeks had a strong game in that one as well, in the halves.
Deeks was injured in that.
Was he injured?
Yeah.
Oh, there must have been Penrith.
You're thinking of 03?
Yeah, 04.
Four, yeah.
So many.
Yeah, we were.
It was too. It wasn't the end of 04. Didn't he break his pellet?
Against Penrith?
No. In the internationals at the end of the year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He took a face knock and he broke the inside of his mouth.
He got
and they had to put a balloon up his nose to stop him from.
Yeah, it was Brooksy, Chris Brooks.
Yeah.
He was lying and literally, because he'd broken the inside of his palate,
it
wouldn't stop bleeding.
That man, he had sausage skin, but he also detached the retina in his eye. Do you remember that as well?
Yeah.
Hope you're not eating at home, ladies and gentlemen. My apologies if you are.
He even missed, I think he missed that World Cup challenge. He's injured his foot. He broke his foot at La Santa training ground in the gym.
Dancing.
Yeah.
He was dancing and he stood on a weight. He stood on a weight and he twisted his foot and broke a bone foot.
Yeah, and missed the World Cup challenge.
Like the unluckiest man on the planet. And yet one of the nicest men on the planet as well and talented. Look, out of all the sort of domestic grand finals, are there any of those that stick out to you? Challenge Cup, obviously you played in quite a number of those, as well as Super League grand finals.
The 05 one was really good. I mean, why the 05 one? I think because the journey we set off on, and it was 12 games to go before, and we played Leeds away. And we'd been playing pretty rubbish.
We were fifth.
We were fifth. We'd lost to Widnes at home.
I think we might have been even like eighth or something, but we were travelling really badly.
Yeah. Oh, we lost to Widnes at home. We lost to Cass away. I can remember in that game they were shouting, "We want 50. We want 50, because that's how we're still beating us by. We lost two games in a row by almost 50. And so it was a bad year, like you said. But the journey, and the point was, the journey starts at Leeds Rhinos, and it's nothing better than beating Leeds away.
I got to admit, there's so many of our teammates from that generation actually do pinpoint that 2005 Grand Final as their favourite Grand Final, and not because of the game itself, but again, like what you're saying, the journey that we went on because we were travelling so badly, and then collectively, I remember the conversation that we were having. We were saying, you know what, this is the last. Everyone knew who was going. And part of the conversation was, this is the last time this group is going to be together. So let's do it together. And we woke up. And what better place to do it than at Headingley?
Well, it started at Leeds. And if memory serves me correctly, which I hope it does, although I'm getting a little bit more mature, it was 12 games unbeaten, wasn't it? From Leeds there on, that was it. We didn't lose another game.
That's right. Actually, I'm just having a look at the time. We're going to go to another break as we speak right now. When we come back, we're going to be looking at some of the hot topics and we're going to continue on with more of your questions. So keep firing them in. All that and more after the break, so stay with us.
Big names and big stories from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse One.
Kia ora, RHP here with Super Stu Fielding and producer Ewan is sitting in also. And we've also got Jakey the Mass. He's across the social media tonight working on Facebook Live. Go on my Facebook page and you'll be able to watch us live in the studio. Stuart looks like he's eating the house. Look how big you are, mate. Look, so you were telling us earlier about your new passion.
Yeah,
you're a very busy man with a lot of balls in the air. You're juggling. So tell us again all about your fitness business that you'll be launching very soon.
Yeah, well, you started with, you know, the point about you still training, and I suppose I've always been training. I always will while I can still walk anyway. So that's always been a passion of mine. Even when we were playing, obviously, you remember the old days with Carl Jennings and that. I remember the days where they used to give us the packs in creatine and like 10 creatine pills.
I can tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we used to go on these preseason training camps. So you basically go away for a week. It's in the middle of January. And the fantastic thing about it is you can kind of get a month worth of work done in that 1 week because you just live, breathe and eat rugby league. Well, our trainer at the time was Carl Jennings, and he had this thing called bombs. So basically what you'd do is you'd get your protein, you get your creatine, you get your L9 carnitine, whatever it's called,
HMB,
and he'd say rather than sort of taking them all individually, basically you just got to get them into you. Now, Stuart used to take this literally, so he'd basically put all of these pills and powders all into one shaker and basically get the, what do you call it, the blender and blend them all together. And then he'd drink it. Oh, they were horrible. They were disgusting. Absolutely horrible. And actually, I remember Stu had this plaster on his finger. And out of nowhere, he had this plaster on his finger and it was strapped. It wasn't a plaster. It was actually just some ankle strapping. He just put some strapping on it. And I said, "What'd you do with your finger?" He said, "Nothing." And I said to him, because you know what they'll call billies. And basically they're like mixers that you put into it. Like you get a bowl and it's a mixer. It's a
hand blender.
Hand blender, that's it. And I said, "You've cut yourself with a billy, haven't you?" And he said to me, "Yes, I have." He said, "How do you know?" And I said, "Because I did it yesterday." Just curiously having a look at the blender. I wonder if I did. And then push the button. Cut. I don't know if you did it as stupidly as I did, but you did. Anyway, I cut you off there. But these shakes that Stuart used to make were absolutely horrible.
I wasn't the only one.
Drink those things?
I think, everyone used to drink them. Thus, you weren't, carcinogens and bombs. Everyone didn't
drink, the bombs. They didn't drink what you drank.
It was the easiest way to get it all in. But on that point, yeah, I've always been kind of passionate about training and supplements and things like that. And so it just a logical progression. After I've kind of finished rugby league, was to start up the kind of field and fitness and get into it.
So what with field and fitness, what's going to make yours unique? What's going to be your unique selling point? Why should our listeners or anyone that's interested in getting into exercise and training, why should they turn towards yourself? Because we'll have you back on the show and we'll talk about how you're getting on. But just, you know, what's your unique selling point?
Well, in that, I mean, there's going to be online programs as well, which is not exactly everywhere, is it? But the main kind of point is that experience, and it's sort of the youngsters and adults who haven't had the chance to be professional. Mm-hmm. That experience from there, they haven't necessarily had the chance to be professional and make it. And so that experience and all that I can pass along, that I can pass along to it. Plus, you know, the kind of personal training that you'll get through that. Programs, you'll get, you know, everything, with diet, all sorts.
Well, on that note then, I'm going to pull away from that. I'm going to we've got a question from Sophie, and she wants to know, what was your international call-up like? What did it mean to you? Because every little kid wants to represent their country. So what was the experience like for Stuart Fielding when you got called into the international, I think it was Great Britain. Was it Great Britain
You've got two parallels with this, Robbie, and you've got your first one. And what I mean is, because they're both similar, I got called up and then it was kind of a fake call-up. Not only for my great...
What do you mean?
If you listen to it, I'll tell you. For the Great Britain and also for the Bradford, for my debut for Bradford Bulls.
Yeah, yeah.
So in 99, I got called up for the first team for the, I think it was the Sevens. And then it got cancelled. So I literally back home in Hebden Bridge, which is Halifax.
Oh, the international sevens.
Yeah, Great Britain. But it was first adult call-up for Great Britain. I was called into...
99. A 99. Yeah. I know, it would have been the nines, the world nines.
Nines then, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously not memorable for the numbers because I didn't get played. So I was obviously celebrating. It was back in the local paper at the time.
Yes, I've made it. Yeah. I made my debut in the world nines. 1997, 2 years earlier, they did play the World Nines at that point, and they played it in Townsville, Australia.
Very hot.
And that was my debut. So, but what you tried to do, you want to get on the radar of the selectors. So getting, even if it is the Nines, it is a big part of your natural progression, isn't it?
Well, I played for Great Britain Academy and played for Yorkshire and things, but again, Academy. But to get on the first team in any regard was just...
What was your Bulls debut? What year was your Bulls debut?
The Bulls debut was 1998, but the parallel I told you about the Great Britain was the fact that with Bradford the week before, I actually made my debut. So I was on the bench and I didn't come on. I didn't get onto the pitch, and that was against Halifax. And Bradford
lost.
Your
home club.
So obviously I had the woohoo, you know,
gonna play against.
Gonna play. It's gonna be this, and it was against Halifax, my home team.
You would have gone on there and ripped up, wouldn't you? Purely and simply, you used to love playing against Halifax and Leeds.
I did,
two local derbies were the ones that you got juiced up for. You loved playing in those games.
I think we all did.
Oh, we did, yeah.
But the parallel there is, yeah, so the week before my Bradford debut against Wigan, ironically, was Halifax, and I didn't get on the pitch. So obviously the parallel of being the Great Britain of both weeks, but your week before, well, woohoo, yay! obviously, see, you know, ring mum. Yeah, hi mum. Yeah,
ring all your mates. Yeah. Everyone's patting you on the back.
Yeah.
And it just goes,
yeah, and then I didn't get on. And to make things worse, Bradford lost to Halifax in 98. But that
wasn't a good year, 98. It wasn't a good year for the Bulls.
No, a lot of injuries and a lot of losses, wasn't there? I can remember Sean Edwards played, didn't he, for what was it, last eight games?
No, he played for the first half. He got contracted early in the season. So the 1998 season come along and he wasn't a good fit for the club. I remember, you know, in that sort of that diamond of, the triangle, at least at the time before the fullbacks become so influential. The Jimmy Lowe's and Graham Bradley, who was playing standoff or loose forward at the time, and Stevie Mac, they didn't click with him. I got on all right with Sean, but he didn't sort of mold into that sort of look. And the most decorated player in rugby league ever is Sean Edwards, but that doesn't necessarily mean it makes synergy, does it? You know, the world-class teams and the championship, the silverware-winning teams, it's about complementing one another. And when Sean come in, the match just didn't work. So that was the first half of the season, and then he left halfway through.
To London. Then we played London on the road in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And we lost.
And he played.
Yeah, and he played.
I remember that game because I remember Matthew Elliott coming off and looking at all the senior forwards, and because you had a stormer. It was one of your first games, and you come off the bench and you were banging people all over the field. They were targeting you because you were a young player. To their negative, because obviously every time they run into you, you snap their heads back, and it did too. I remember thinking, "Ooh, we got one here." You know when you get to play alongside one of those players, and I got to admit, I didn't know a lot about you. You'd only just started training with us. You weren't the Stuart Fielding who ran around and bullied everyone like at training, like you grew to be.
Come on now.
Yeah, bullying in the nicest sense ever, you know, because that's how you train. You compete at that level all the time in everything that you do, which is an earmark of, you know, success. It is, whether you want to look at it. So at that point, we hadn't seen that. But I remember in that game, that's when you landed on my radar, because there were about four or five of the opposition's forwards that I think they had sore necks by the end of that game with a little bit of whiplash involved. So just talking about actually one good seamless transition from that into the Four Nations that we've got coming up. Four Nation kicks off this week. I mean, are you a big fan of the format? We've got the big three, Australia, New Zealand and England, but there's always emerging nations team that earns the right to be here. So obviously over last year, so down under at this point in time, there's emerging nations, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga and the Cook Islands are competing to play in the next round of Four Nations. Whoever wins that little micro tournament will go. Last year, you had Ireland, Wales, Scotland and France competing to play in this year's Four Nations. Scotland was successful. Are you a fan of that? It gives those emerging nations something to play for?
It certainly does. And you, like anything, you need to have that reward, don't you? So they've got the competition. I get that. England, Scotland and whoever's not the fourth nation making it up, which is good. But the team that then gets through, Scotland, you cannot really see much positive coming out of it. And what I mean is them getting smashed by Australia and New Zealand and England by 40 points, 60 points, it just doesn't really do favours to anyone. So would it be better to have just the three teams and revert back to the Tri-Nations, or would it, you're saying, right, well, no, we'll stick with this? Because, I mean, look at England in the World Cup against Ireland. They smashed them.
Last year, though, when Samoa was playing in the Four Nations down under, was it last year? No, sorry, the year before in 2014, Samoa had actually took New Zealand and England all the way to the wire. They played, I would say, pretty confidently for 60 minutes against Australia, and then they pulled away. But nearly I think 80% of their players were NRL players.
But that's the thing. I think the Antipodeans there, so if you've got your PNG, you've got your Samoa, you got your teams there, they've got class teams, like you said. The majority of their players are playing first-team NRL football. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the majority of the teams that fill in that Four Nations, they just... I'm not sure it's a positive thing. It's positive that they've earned it there and they've put a team together, because obviously Scotland, you know, it's rugby league's not known in Scotland, is it? Mm. Spreading the word a little bit, but also...
Well, the test match against New Zealand's in Workington. It's on the border. It's on the border. It's close enough. Okay. All right, actually, before we go any further, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue to speak about the Four Nations, and we'll also grab a couple more of your questions. So stick with us here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
Whatever the story, we've got it covered. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
Welcome back to the final segment of the RHP Show, and we're continuing on with the hottest topics in the sport, including your questions. And we've got some questions that Ewan's got lined up. Ewan, fire them over.
Right, there's a couple coming in on the Facebook Live. So the first one is from Melanie. It says, ask Stu about travelling to Wembley and something to do with bandaged hands. What's your version of that event in 97?
Bandaged hands? I'm not sure about the bandaged hands.
It's a family show, Stu.
Yeah. But regarding that, I'm pretty sure that I lost. I got to Wembley with the team. The first team were playing. Robbie, you were playing. Wasn't a great day that day for the team, was it?
No, it wasn't. We had steamrolled the competition.
Yeah.
In 1997, we had steamrolled the competition. No one could touch us, and we went into the game as white-hot favourites to pick up the Challenge Cup final after the loss in 1996, the year before.
Which year was the Nathan Graham?
96.
Was that 96?
But we just didn't perform.
Perth were against Saints.
Mm. But it was this question. This was about you.
Yeah,
wasn't about,
it is. I was trying to deflect to you. I'd like to say I watched the game, but I didn't, because I lost my ticket.
Didn't even get into the stadium.
That's a negative.
So what did you do?
I went and got back on the bus.
You just sat on the bus for the...
I didn't have a choice. They wouldn't let me in the stadium without a ticket. So I literally went up and sat on the coach.
Oh, you poor thing. You must have been like a sick puppy dog, just sort of... what was me? Did the back in those days, did the bus actually have a TV at least?
I'm not sure.
Or did you sit there and have to read a book or something?
I was so distraught that I'd lost my ticket.
Walk up Wembley Way and just drink coffee and have a pie.
Well, it was pretty empty, yeah. Everyone was in the...
You had to run a Wembley Way. First person. You and anything else?
Well, this is not really a question, this, but it's from a guy called Steve Heward, who says... she wants to know how you are, and my missus wants to know how you are, and
his missus
to fancy the pants off you. So please say hi to Stacey Heward.
Right, hi Stacey.
Hi Stacey. Hope you're enjoying the show.
And then he subsequently emailed us in to say hi to Stacey Heward, currently in a hot tub in Brid, and we'll make her day.
Hi to Stacey in the hot tub in Brid. It's at 10 to 7.
10 to 7.
Party time.
I think something's.
Jakey, who's across social media, he was saying before off air when we were in the ad break that he wanted proof that Stacey was in the hot tub. Jakey, mate, this is a family show. Don't be like that.
I also had one more from someone in our office, actually, Martin, who lives in Otley. He says he wants to know who was the hardest player you ever came up against in your career.
The hardest?
If you asked that to anyone else, they would probably say you.
just one of those when you... You'd like to put it.
You've
got to
say it's
a
half minutes. You got to say it's someone like myself. You know what I mean?
I don't know what's coming here.
Well, you guys are all big, so it's easy for you guys to play against other big blokes. But little blokes, do you know what I mean? You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it's all about you, though, isn't it? That's a fair.
I'm not saying it was me, but I'm just saying it. You know, little blokes and big man sport. Got to be something in that.
No, but
who did you?
Team, but
who
a
did
me.
You like? Who did you come up against over the course of your career and think, tell you what, this guy is relentless.
Some great tough players. I mean, early days, and I was a bit, you know, really young at that point in the World Cup. People like Tallis.
Oh, yeah.
What
he used to pick on me in test matches. He used to look at me and smile at me. He used to scare the hell out of me.
What was it, the bull, the raging bull, they called him?
Yeah.
And then that's when we were playing there in the World Cup, and that sort of, that team then with the Johnses in it, you know,
What a team the Australians had.
Oh, got, my gosh. That was a team.
The England got the England team in the Cup World Cup got hammered. It was 22-2, I think, at Twickenham. Tough players like that, but then...
2000 World Cup, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. That was an awesome Aussie team, though. Yeah. I mean, New Zealand, I played in that final at Old Trafford, the World Cup final. And I remember lining up against them and just thinking, whew, we're in for a night tonight.
But those nights back then, that was before kind of the New Zealand team came to a bit prominence and won it in 2005?
Yeah, once they got rid of me. Once I stopped playing for them. No, my international career, my last game was 2006. So I like to think that I paved the way for that successful New Zealand team. But no, that new generation of New Zealand star came through and they were something special. They really were.
Well, isn't there about 40-50% of the NRL they're eligible to play for New Zealand, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a massive proportion. And I mean, there's a lot of players like Jonathan Thurston. One of his parents is a Kiwi as well. You know, but he aligned himself with Australia. Jason Tamo, another giant that, you know, he's Māori and he played for Australia as well.
Some people have played for both.
Yeah, who was it now that played for?
Carroll.
Yeah, Tony Carroll.
Big, massive.
TC.
Biggest jaw ever, but what a winger. But he played for both.
Oh, man, he was powerful. But he played in that 2000 World Cup as well.
Back on the tough players one, it's got to probably sort some of people like Webke and Sonny Bill Williams. I think Sonny Bill Williams in the aspect of, you touched on it saying, big fellas tackling big fellas, it's what you do, it's your job. But when you get a big fella like that, and we obviously played against him, he's in front of you and he's got feet like a centre, like a Shawnee and then he's suddenly not there and he's sort of 6'6" and 110 kilos. That's the hardest ones. Rather than the just ones that run straight at you.
How did you feel playing against the likes of Rob Burrow?
I saw the picture you put on today actually on Twitter. Do you know where... You're kind of running away, but the shot before that I put back on after, where I'm kind of ragging you about.
When you're grabbing me by the ears.
Yeah, and you mentioned the head high tackle.
Yeah.
Now, but as the law goes, and it touches on Rob Burrows, and that's height. So any time you touch your head, it's a head high tackle. But if you're going to look in the context of it, I mean, what are you? You are half man size, aren't you? Certainly, Rob Burrow. Well,
he's tiny compared to me.
Five.
I like hanging out with Rob Burrow because he makes me feel, you know, like tall.
Well, like a real size man, rather than what the nickname we gave you, Sausage Dog.
Sausage Dog.
And that's nothing.
You know why he gives me Sausage Dog? It's because I've got a long body. If you actually put
me in
chair
next together.
Well, if we
sit up here, you're actually the same height as me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just easy. I always push my chairs down, but I've got little legs. But I'm happy with me. So, but he gave me the nickname, two nicknames, Wee Man. Because what's that's
just
the,
means Scottish for small.
Wee Man, Mini Me, and Sausage Dog. That's one of my best mates that I played alongside of. That's what he called me every single day. He still, when I walked in today, you know, he was in the studio and he said, "Look, hey, Wee Man."
I have got a funny one on that point, on the size point.
And there's no funny ones about
it,
that.
It is funny. Well, I find it funny, so I'm going to say it.
I can feel where this is going.
It's not actually about you.
Oh, good.
I know there's no Iron Team.
I'm cool with it, then. I mean, run with it. Go for it.
We had a photo shoot before, I think it was the beginning of 2006, or just before the derbies, Leeds, Bradford, I think it was Saints, Wigan. So you had all representatives from all those four teams having a photo shoot. And Rob Burrows was one.
Yeah.
Lee Gilmore, and Mickey Hyatt. And they had to make it all head high and eye level, they had to stand Rob Burrow in a box. And that's God's honest truth. and we all got body painted. I've still got the photo. We all got body painted up to like superheroes with masks and things. It was sort of before the Avengers and they came into the prominence.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was all painted up. So Gilly was obviously, was he Wigan then? McKay was Saints, obviously Burrow was Leeds. I was Bradford.
So it was like the big four.
Yeah. And Gilly was Wigan.
Poor Rob Burrow. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. There was a few players in the world of rugby league that made me nervous when he was attacking your defensive line. Rob Burrow was one of them. And to be honest, to a lot of Super League clubs, I think he still is. We're running out of time and I haven't got even to an eighth of what we were supposed to get through today. But One thing I did want to ask you is about England's pack is undoubtedly as good, if not better, with enough, and there's enough strike on the edges for England this year. But just quickly, how do you think England's going to fare in this Four Nations tournament?
I think they're going to do all right. And you've got to see the main, again, like we spoke about earlier, with Nobby taking over. So who's leading the team? Who's driving it? And it's Wayne, isn't it? Wayne Bennett.
Yeah.
What? There's no better coach in the world.
No better coach in the world. He's got a headache on his hands to see who he's going to actually choose as his captain. Stu, we've run out of time. It's awesome. It's been awesome having you on. We'll get you on again. Big thanks to all of you listening, wherever you are tonight. If you want to listen again, we'll upload the show on the website, pulse1.co.uk/RHP show in about 10 minutes. So enjoy your lives, love your families, and live your rugby.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1. Wednesday evening from 6.